This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Hello, welcome to another edition of Nerdificent. I am one half of your host, Danny Fernandez. Sitting across from me in the virtual space is...
Iffy Wadi Wayne.
Yes.
Yeah.
Here we are. Iffy, you look slick with your hair and...
Oh, yeah.
I got to see the process happening as you were doing it.
Yeah. It got straightened. It got pressed. Every time anyone puts a pressing comb on a stove, I just get like... tense, because there's so many memories of burn marks right on the forehead because that pressing comb got too close. But no, you know, my barber, she's a professional, and she pressed my hair out and then braided it. Now we're just living life.
Yes, we have some news that we wanted to share with everybody.
Yeah, some big news. Go ahead and take a seat. Come in. Grab a coffee. Because it's time for us to tell y'all, you know, there are One Pieces that go on for 933 episodes and 16 movies. You have, you know, Inuyasha, which I still never ends, you know, even DBZ that go on forever. And then you have, you know, Gurren Lagann. 26 tight episodes. You have Megalobox, another tight anime series. These are the ones I like, even though I do like DBZ. I think this is the way we're trying to say is we're taking Nerdificent in for a landing.
A permanent landing.
Yeah. And we're landing it, putting it in the hangar and closing the door.
Iffy and I, you know, we've been doing the podcast for, I think, over 2 years, actually. Yeah. I think when we did our promos, it was 2017.
Yeah.
If I remember when first were recording. But and this isn't iHeart's decision. I just want to say that this was Iffy and I's decision. We're not being cut.
yeah, they didn't cut us. Honestly, they probably would rather we didn't. But yeah.
We just felt that this was a good conclusion to something that we've done. And if you were with us before, we were doing Krillin' It for however many years. And it's been about, you know, 6 years. And so I think that we are just ready to close the chapter of Nerdificent. I think that it'll still exist. You can still listen to all of the episodes. You can still point to people if you are, I don't know, going on a panel and talking about Wonder Woman. Our Wonder Woman episode is still great. Our Miles Morales episode is still great. If you're trying to get your niece or nephew into this fandom, you can still send them these episodes. And you can still hit us up to be on panels. But we decided that next episode is going to be our last episode. So we're going to do some commemorative stuff with some past guests. Definitely shout us out on our socials if you have good Nerdificent memories. We just felt like it was time. And so we wanted to tell y'all so we didn't just disappear to the ether.
Yeah. just give y'all a heads up so that you don't start the next episode and it's like, hey, by the way, this is it. So, yeah, thank you so much to all our listeners, to everyone who supported us. It means a lot. I mean, you're definitely not going to see The Last of Us, but, you know, you probably won't be downloading anymore. Well, you can save up some space on your phone now.
Yeah. Don't let anyone take our name, though. I think iHeart still owns it.
Yeah.
But I did want to bring in our guest this week. We were talking about Pixar, and she was actually on our Haunted Mansion episode, as she is the queen of Disney. It is Sabina Graves. Hey.
Yeah. Hey, everyone. Thanks for calling me the queen of Disney. I like that. There are many. There should be more Disney queens. We have too many Disney princesses.
A lot of princesses, not enough queens.
Speaking of, who is your favorite Disney princess, Sabina?
It's Belle. I'm actually wearing Belle. Wow, straight off the bat.
Yeah, you are.
Weirdly, wearing Belle right now.
One of my favorite things about her for the Disney princess panel I did last year, that Paige O'Hara, who's the voice of Belle, was on, and that she was talking about, it was like this woman who was like, no, I don't want to marry you. I just want to read my books. Like, get out of here. Yeah. Like, it was so funny to have this princess that was like actively turning down, you know, not to go after Ariel, who I adore, but was chasing after a prince. For her to be, she was captured. She felt, you know, Belle was captured and eventually fell in love. But to have this suitor and her be like, nah, I'm good. I'm not going to be your wife. Like, LOL to that.
Yeah, and I like how it takes a look at a toxic masculinity, and I think, you know, the Beast grows out of it, and then Gaston does not, even though he's seen as, like, you know, the town hero and stuff like that. And
yes, yeah, spoiler. Undoing.
Spoilers.
Spoiler. He has a bit. It's like 20 something plus years. Spoiler.
Spoiler alert.
But yeah, today we are covering Pixar. I guess let's just go, like, what is everyone's favorite Pixar movie before I hop into it?
Ooh, what a good question.
I would definitely say, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say Sabina probably has one ready to go, so I'll let her.
I have, like, a tie between WALL-E and Coco. WALL-E was my longtime just favorite Pixar film. You know, it's such a simple, like simple story that is told through, like, you know, this, like, space and the commentary about, like, protecting our planet, but also just the beauty in, like, the exploration of these emotions through robots that, you know, like, robots don't have emotions, but, you know, WALL-E and Eve are so expressive and effective in, you know, seeing a future we don't want to have, but also seeing the importance of what is worth fighting for in life.
I mean, yeah, it's so hard because they've done so many. I'm just refreshing. I'd say before, I would have probably said the Toy Story series. That probably would have been mine. Toy Story 4 I felt was really strong. But I think I think you're right. I think it's Coco. Coco is just so, there's just so much more flavor in that movie than in the other ones, and I hope it's something they take note of, because I mean, just in general, I think a lot of the, like, very, I guess you would say, like, legend-esque movies are so Eurocentric, you know, with your Braves and even because Pixar and Disney are so neck and neck that I get afraid of, like, confusing the two. But yeah, for them, whenever they step out and, like, use, like, a cultural voice, it just makes it so much stronger. Ratatouille with the French, you know.
Yeah. Mine are both of those. I would say Coco is so representative, obviously, of my heritage, that it was so, anytime I feel bad as a creator, like, my voice doesn't matter, I'm not doing enough, or, like, I'm not supposed to be here, or anytime I'm just feeling really down, I'll watch it and be like, hell yeah, through tears, then I'll go and want to write. But Toy Story was so groundbreaking at the time, like, just to have that type of animation style and the humor, it's really funny, and something that I think adults enjoyed as well. It had a lot of adult, like, inside jokes that I wouldn't have gotten until I was older, so mine's definitely both of those too.
Nemo.
Nemo is great.
I love how movies like Nemo and Toy Story informed our senses of humor, I would say, in very many ways. You know, we like, he touched the butt, which mm-hmm. I feel, you know.
So let's talk about the start of Pixar. Pixar Animation Studios is an American computer animation film studio based in Emeryville, California, and a part of the Walt Disney Studios group. The studio has earned 27 Academy Awards. Honestly, thought it was more than that, but 8 Golden Globes, 3 Grammy Awards, along with many other awards and acknowledgments. It's best known for its CGI animated feature films created with photorealistic Render Man, its own implementation of the industry standard Render Man image rendering application programming interface used to generate high quality images. So Pixar actually began back in 1979 as the graphics group, part of the computer division of Lucasfilm, before it was acquired by Apple computer co-founder Steve Jobs in 1986. The Walt Disney Company bought Pixar in 2006 at a valuation of $7.4 billion. The transaction made Jobs the largest shareholder in Disney. A lot of big names in there, from it being with Lucasfilm to Steve Jobs, just people that were at the forefront also of this type of technology in film.
Definitely. And it's all these people who kind of knew each other coming up. So, because I know Lasseter had left Disney when he had met up with Steve Jobs and Ed Catmull in the early days of Pixar. And that they had set up to do some computer science stuff, but ended up doing, you know, more of computer animation for commercials. And from there, that kind of like snowballed into, let's make some short films in this style, which led to Toy Story.
And so now, kind of like what you were saying, Iffy is at their neck and neck. So Walt Disney Animation Studios is in Burbank, California. However, it's hard to tell the difference between the two because it used to be 3D animation, right? And then the 2D animation. Yeah. So Toy Story was coming out when, say, they were still making Princess and the Frog or Pocahontas, which was several years before, or Mulan. You know, it was easy to differentiate between what was Pixar and what was Disney or Walt Disney Animation.
Yeah.
Now Moana is Walt Disney Animation. Mm-hmm. Frozen is Walt Disney Animation. Ralph, a lot of people will say like, oh, you're a Pixar character. I'm not. Ralph is not Pixar. That's all. But it's very confusing now that they're using 3D animation.
If you would have asked me, I would have said, I would have said that that was Pixar. That's why I had to catch myself when I was saying the Eurocentric, because in my head, Frozen is Pixar, because you're right. It used to be that Pixar did all the 3D animation and then Walt Disney Animation did the 2D. And now it's just they just do what they do.
It gets so confusing because there was a point in time where Disney separately was trying to do computer animation than Pixar. So they did Chicken Little, Meet the Robinsons. Meet the Robinsons is actually one of my favorite movies. It's it's not Disney. Oh, no, it is Disney. But it has, like, the Pixar touch. They had some of the story trust from Pixar come in and try to kind of, like, fix that movie. and I love it for all its imperfections, honestly. But it's based around one of my favorite Disney quotes, which is keep moving forward. And that I take that with me everywhere in my head. Just, like, keep moving forward, keep moving past things.
Oh, yeah.
Work through it and stuff. But, yeah, so after those two films and then like Tangled and like two onward, basically, I guess, because like now it's like it's just this big mishmash of like CG feels like Pixar, but it's some of it's Pixar, some of it's Disney. For a while it was very Eurocentric. And I really like how with Onward, Pixar tried to make a Eurocentric movie, but with blue people.
So, you know, we all know Pixar is this like huge success and big, you know, part of Disney history. But I mean, at first, I think one of the first things is that they worked with Disney, but they kind of, because now technically Disney owns it, right? But before it was like they were their own entity and CGI isn't cheap. First big concept, really, which was Toy Story, was kind of just touch and go. Like it wasn't like like, we look back and we're like, oh, yeah, that's a smash hit, of course. But getting it onto the screen was a challenge. I mean, despite the total income from the projects before, they continue to lose money and jobs. And as the chairman of the board and now at the time of this full owner,
Steve Jobs. Yeah.
Steve Jobs was considering selling it. And as late as 1994, they were still trying to figure out what they were going to do. They were trying to sell it to like Hallmark, to Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen, or Oracle, which what is that world? Oracle makes like Java that you use online, and they do a lot of cloud servers now. But what is the world in which they took over Pixar?
Or Hallmark. Wow. Yeah. I mean, they would make those movies a little bit better. Yeah. But
so many CG Christmas movies.
Yeah, but so it was only after learning that from the New York critics that Toy Story was probably going to be a hit, and confirming that Disney was going to distribute it in the 1995 Christmas season, that they decided to give Pixar one more chance. And for the first time, Jobs was taking active leadership in the company and made himself CEO. And Toy Story then went on to gross more than $373 million worldwide. And that's when Pixar held its first initial public offering, which was in November 29th of 1995. And it exceeded Netscape. Y'all remember Netscape?
Yeah.
As the biggest IPO of the year. And in only the first half hour of trading, Pixar stock shot up from $22 to $45. Man, if I could have known, I mean, I was a child, but putting money in back then. Delaying trading because of unmatched buy orders, shares climbed up to $49 before closing at the day at $39. Which, man... Yeah, it's always funny because, like, of course, now you're thinking, man, I wish. But if you were like this animation studio that's kind of new, you'd probably be like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah. One of the crazy things, though, is that during this time, Steve Jobs pulled, you know, some of the main people at Pixar aside and was like, you know, I make computers. That computer reaches your doorstep. It's good for 3 to 5 years. You have the potential to make things that will be immortal, that will just go on and, you know, open the hearts of like families over the world. And that's essentially what Pixar ended up becoming.
Mm. Yeah. So in the 1990s and 2000s, they gradually developed the Pixar Brain Trust, which, if you're a Disney person, you've heard this quite a bit. I think actually before, do you remember, Sabina, the short that they showed of this? Gosh, what it was like before a movie, maybe Finding Nemo. It was like they showed some of the directors sitting around a table, and they were talking about how they essentially at this one meeting came up with what would eventually be Toy Story and Monsters, Inc. And do you remember that? I'll have to send it up.
Yeah, I don't exactly remember which one it was in front of. But I loved when, like, movie studios would do that, like, behind the scenes before the movie to kind of get you, like, interested in, like, this is how we make things. The Brain Trust was originally composed of the original filmmakers, you know, Lasseter, Unkrich, Dr. Stanton, and Joe Ramph, who was their story supervisor. But they basically all came together to, you know, imagine the house that Pixar would become. And I think that it's definitely like originated by some of those conversations they had early on with Steve Jobs about what they could do as filmmakers.
We have to take a really quick break, and then we're going to hop back into more about Pixar right after this.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring, and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-lunch pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
And we are back. We are still talking about Pixar. And before Mommy and Daddy got married, they had a bit of a feud together, Disney and Pixar. Oh, they had been married.
They had an entanglement.
Pixar Pier is in Disney's California Adventure at Disneyland. It's across, a little across the way from Disneyland proper. And it is filled. I was there before it was Pixar Pier, to be honest. I was there before California Adventure existed. But it is a great, it has our favorite place to drink. When Sabine and I go, we drink.
We just go drink there. And it's also,
which is the Lamplight. Yeah, which is a restaurant. It's okay. So here's the thing. I'm explaining to Pixar fans who haven't been there because it is really great. So it overlooks a pier, which has the Screamin', the Incredicoaster.
Incredicoaster, yeah.
Has the
formerly known as Screamin'.
California Screamin'.
Formerly known as Screamin', the Incredicoaster. But it overlooks the water and the Mickey Ferris wheel. And they have, it's just decked out in Pixar everything. So it has the Toy Story ball. Sorry if that has an official name, I forgot.
The Mickey Ferris wheel is now the Pixar pal around, but it still has the Mickey face on it.
But my favorite thing about Lamplight, the actual place, is that it's all decked out in Pixar stuff. Everything is Pixar themed. Like all the drinks, like for the adults, mm-hmm. they have like Monsters, Inc., like
the Scream
whiskey
canister.
Drinks. Yes. They have drinks like cauldron drink alcohol that like they put something in and it bubbles and you drink it and can get you drunk. I just love it because it's my two favorite things. I sound like an alcoholic. What I'm saying is I love being an adult and having the money to buy Pixar things, like Disney things, but also having fun with my adult friends. And so they have a ton of quotes and artwork. Like they have a lot of art, Pixar art inside the restaurant. It's really just beautiful and I adore it. But Pixar Pier has a lot of the games, like Toy Story games, Monsters, Inc. They now have Coco stuff in there. They have an entire Coco mural, actually, mm-hmm. there. So it's, yeah. Did I do it justice, Sabina?
So the Monsters, Inc. ride is actually separated from Pixar Pier, but that was there before Pixar Pier happened.
Mm-hmm.
I love all the murals, and the Lamplight Lounge is so much fun to go to with friends because we're having all these fun fizzy drinks that are like very, on brand for Pixar, but we're surrounded by, original art from the studios that is stuff from pre-production. On the walls, they have those quotes. They also have like the crew shirts that people get from working on the productions that are like way cooler than some of the stuff we have that I'm like looking at. They had at one point, I think a Coco shirt that was a Day of the Dead skull, but it was styled like Sid's shirt from Toy Story.
Mm. Oh, that's
and
cool. Yeah.
That is so rad. I'm like, I need one. I need one of those in my life. I think one of my friends actually got one from going to Pixar. And you're just like hanging out, having drinks and having.
Yeah. Watching it get built out was wild, too, because I remember early the biggest Pixar kind of footprint that you had in California Screaming or California Adventure. Was the Bug's Life. But then you had the things where they did a full remodel. I think I was working at Disneyland at the time, but they fully remodeled California Adventure to look like the Carthay Circle, and that's when they started adding the Pixar Land. And one of the biggest kind of turnouts that came, and probably is my favorite part of that, is going to be the Cars Land, because the ride is like pretty cool, but the like those cone the cone like chili
cheese, con queso.
It was undefeated. Probably my favorite. But yeah, that was the biggest thing, is that, and you know, y'all talking about the drink, but that was the biggest piece of trivia, is that that was the only place you can drink in Disneyland, because the only in the two combined parks.
Yeah.
Because outside of that, the only place you can drink in Disneyland was Club 33. I don't know if that's changed
or
since
Downtown
then.
Disney. Yeah.
Yeah. Like in parks.
Now it's Uga's Cantina at Galaxy's Edge. Also, you can drink those drinks are very overrated.
Oh really? I've heard people say the other. I just, because people like the tingly mouth one. I haven't been to Galaxy's Edge yet. I need the tingly mouth drink.
Going back to the Cars ride in Cars Land, the Cars ride is my favorite Cars movie.
Yeah.
Oh wait, what? Can you? I'm sorry. Say that again.
The Cars ride is my favorite Cars movie.
Oh, okay. I was like lost. I thought you were saying like that's your... I thought you were saying that that's Cars. Your favorite... Okay, I understand you now. I thought you were saying that Cars was your favorite Pixar movie, and I was like, ma'am, why... ma'am, why are you on this?
It's great. No, it's just like you're going through like... you know, the what's it called, the ornament of the
Radiator Springs.
Yeah, you're just going through Radiator Springs, but the ride is just so much fun. Like, I liken it to the Pandora ride at Disney World, where that is also my favorite Avatar movie, is that ride. No, just like they make some really great high concept thrill rides for some of the biggest IPs, you know, and some of the other ones they kind of just slap the IP on the ride, like the Incredicoaster. But yes, you know, like, you know, I think Cars Land was like the biggest like sign for people to redirect them to California Adventure, because, my girl California Adventure was not doing good.
It was definitely a high mid for a lot of people. The biggest highlight for a lot of people I spoke to was the soaring over, because you got the smells blown at you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I could do a whole episode just on Disney park culture, because that's a whole underworld that I knew all too well, got angry at times about, and just it's a whole thing.
I may be involved with something like that.
In
the near future, actually.
Yeah.
About the theme parks with a mutual friend of everyone here.
Yeah.
Definitely with the IP of Pixar moving to Disney's California Adventure, it opened up new avenues for these worlds that we've always wanted to be a part of, to be places we can go to. Like, now there's a whole ride based on Inside Out called Emotional Whirlwind, which is a reskin of a ride from A Bug's Land, but it's still cute because you get like the sound effects of like the orbs spinning, and like you're on this ride where you're on an emotional whirlwind.
Well, speaking of A Bug's Life, which was the second film, Pixar's second film, A Bug's Life, almost all subsequent Pixar feature films that were shown in theaters had an original short film shown before it. And so now you can actually, one of my favorite things on Disney Plus is you can go and watch all of the shorts, and also they're just constantly coming out with new shorts. I think it's a great way, aside from some of them being Academy Award winning, but it's a great way for a lot of these artists to kind of get their foot in the door, get their name out there. That's kind of their, I got to see, not that Ralph was the same, obviously it's at Walt Disney Animation, but I got to see the process of how you get promoted to getting to direct, like moving from storyboard artist to lead storyboard artist to director. Really fascinating. A lot of the people there have been working there for a decade plus. So Pixar began producing shorts in the 1980s, actually. The first shorts were made while Pixar was still a computer hardware company, when John Lasseter was the only professional animator in the company's small animation department. Starting with Jerry's Game, after Pixar had converted into an animation studio, all later shorts have been produced with a larger crew and budget. And then in 1991, Pixar made 4 CGI shorts produced for the TV series Sesame Street. The shorts illustrate different weights and directions, starring Luxo Jr. If you don't know Luxo Jr., that is the lamp. And Luxo, light and heavy, surprise, up and down, and front and back. So what are some of y'all's, do you have any shorts that stand out to you?
There were definitely, because that used to be one of my favorite parts of Pixar movies, were the shorts that came up before it.
I did not want to be late to the movies.
Yeah. You just want to catch some of those early joints. I mean,
Mine, what Sabina is the one with the guy playing chess with himself.
Wasn't that Journey's Game?
Oh, yeah. So, yes. so I have seen, 100%. You are absolutely correct. My recent favorite, everyone should go watch, is Out. I actually shared it on my Insta stories. We can link it. You can go watch it right now. It is, I think, their first main queer story, short story, about a guy who's afraid to come out to his family. It's great. And in the traditional Pixar style, very heartwarming and has great build. They're just really great at doing that. There's magicalness to it. There's a magical component to it. So, sorry, that's part of their Spark Shorts series. I should say that Spark Shorts.
And different than just their... have been so great, you know, with Float by Bobby Rubio, which is a Filipino story, and also Bao by Domi Shi.
Which I won the Academy Award in 2018.
And also made me very hungry. I love the ones that, you know, incorporate the different flavors of everyone's backgrounds and stuff. And even going back to other shorts before, like Spark Shorts, Sanjay Super Team was one of my favorites. I think that one was before The Good Dinosaur. And that was about Sanjay Patel kind of growing up on a show like Power Rangers and then basically extending himself to see people that look like him be a like mashup of his culture and the Power Rangers and how like that would look like in his imagination. Like that made me cry so much. You know, it's interesting because we want to see more consistent films with more inclusion behind the helm of these big movies. But with the shorts, you definitely like, I guess, you know, like you said, that became the testing grounds for people to move to the next level.
Someone that we should note that we haven't said yet is Brad Bird.
Yeah.
As being someone who has definitely had a large role in shaping Pixar. Obviously, he is the director of The Incredibles, which to many people is, along with Toy Story, one of the most iconic Pixar films. Something that I think took 14 years, I believe, for a sequel. Is that correct? Yeah. When people were writing Brad Bird, they were like, will you do another one?
We were getting all these car sequels. And meanwhile, like all the Incredible stands were like, where's our sequel? You left us hanging. Like, why is there a Cars 2 right now? Where is Incredibles 2? Like over the years. And that those wishes were finally answered a few years back with The Incredibles 2.
Well, I see a very controversial question here from super producer Joelle Monique, which says, some believe that The Incredibles is one of the greatest superhero stories ever told. Do you agree or disagree? Looks like she's trying to bait us. Iffy, what do you think about Incredibles?
I think it's pretty solid. I mean, you know, while there are like family superhero stories told, they're always like superhero as family. And I feel like The Incredibles are family as superheroes, which is a different, similar but different kind of, I think, spin on it. So I think it definitely can sit at the table, but the greatest is definitely, it's going to be hard to top All-Star Superman for me.
I think spiritually, an interesting thing that has happened with pop culture is, take The Incredibles, for example, is that The Incredibles is seen as a spiritual sort of reimagining of beloved stories like Fantastic Four and like the X-Men. Like, oh, they did some of these things we've seen in the comics in this film way better than some of those films at the time, you know, like the Jessica Alba Fantastic Four movie or slash Chris Evans or like, you know, some of those X-Men movies. People were like, we're seeing some of these things we liked about these properties in The Incredibles and they're pulling it off. Like, this is how it should be. I like this idea of like spiritual sort of like reimaginings and reboots that are like really good at distilling some of these stories that we love and the core of what they mean to us. And instead of just remaking it, like one of my examples that I kind of point to all the time is The Phantom of the Opera. Amazing book. All the adaptations like kind of like try to tackle like just certain beats of it, and then like the mask and he's disfigured. And but there's a movie called The Phantom of Paradise by De Palma that just takes the core of the message behind The Phantom of the Opera and is the most faithful adaptation. And I'm tying this back to Pixar because you have Hunt for the Wilder People, which was directed by Taika Waititi. That is basically a spiritual like adaptation of Pixar's Up that I actually kind of think is a bit more effective than Up. I don't know if y'all have seen Hunt for the Wilder People, but it is basically the story of a like grumpy old man who has to take in a young kid, and they go on an adventure in the woods, in the jungles of New Zealand. And basically it's Up, but like very raunchy and hilarious and heartfelt. It hits all those emotional beats of a Pixar story that, you know, I think honestly draws from the DNA of what has made these movies stand apart from Disney movies. And what I mean by that is that Pixar films are about asking questions about the human condition. And before then, with other Disney movies, we were doing, you know, things about like, I want to meet the love of my life, or, you know, like these very like Eurocentric stories that were about those like fairy tales and stuff. Pixar kind of helped break ground in separating itself from that, which is why I think it stands as its own entity.
What I was going to say that I do enjoy about Brad Bird's work is he clearly is influenced by this mid-century modern post-World War II type of feel. Like he had that in The Iron Giant, which he directed, and definitely in The Incredibles. If you look at the architecture, the hairstyles, the wardrobe, and so I find that really fascinating. It's all very like that mixed with today's technology. I always think that's really cool because it reminds me of some of my other favorite things, like Twilight Zone, you know, or just like that period of time where it's very sleek, but they were also super into aliens and, you know, possible spaceships and whatnot. And so I find that really cool that he kind of just like has centered in on that time period.
Like those timeless touchstones that like get carried on through pop culture of things that like we, you know, grew up on, but then like also look back and are like, oh my gosh, like, this is like the Twilight Zone. One of the things I noticed about like movies that Pete Docter did was that after Pixar for a time had some of their storytellers kind of take care of the Ghibli films when Disney acquired that for a while, they were in charge of sort of restructuring them slash casting the voice actors for American audiences, or I guess English speaking audiences, that after they worked on movies like Howl's Moving Castle, for example, you got movies like Up and Monsters, Inc. And if you notice, in Up, there's, you know, the moving house, and it moves very similarly to how Howl's Moving Castle moves in that film. The same thing with the doors inside Howl's Castle. They kind of lead to other portals and other worlds. That is basically the, you know, that's where they got, I feel like, heavy inspiration for the doors and Monsters, Inc. that lead to other kids' houses. So you kind of see how all these like giant touchstones of pop culture kind of have all influenced one another and carried those things. It's incredible.
We have to take another really quick break, and then we're going to have Sabina talk to us about the Pixar theory, which will blow your mind right after this.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-lunch pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
And we are back. Sabina, would you like to talk to people about the Pixar theory?
Yes, I feel like the graph from It's Always Sunny of like, there's all these things that have, you know, kind of consistently popped back up in Pixar films. I'm not quite sure how it started, but for me, I think I started hearing about it when people started saying that the witch in Brave is Boo and that she's time traveling to find Sully.
How did someone come up with this?
It's the whole theory. The theory is created by John Negroni. He basically put all of the Pixar films into a massive timeline that he calls the Pixar theory. And it spans, I think, 65 million years. Like, it starts at the good dinosaur, essentially, and it, like, makes its way onto, like, onward. But that basically at some point, like, humans get wiped out, humans develop superpowers that, like, you know, in Up, when Muntz is trying to, like, create, like, or, you know, give dogs, like, sentience or voices or whatever, like, he stumbles upon something that leads to the Incredibles having superpowers. It's a lot, but it's a really fun thing to dig into if you're into that thing. And Pixar hasn't entirely rejected this idea. I thought that, like, you know, it would kind of fall apart at movies like Coco and Inside Out. But actually, like, one of the things I saw recently was, if you noticed, when someone is forgotten in the Land of the Dead in Coco, they shimmer in, like, the same color that the forgotten memories in Inside Out shimmer when they're, like, gone. And that's really upsetting to me, but... But it's also, you know, oh, like, you kind of see these little details that kind of, like, inform that, yeah, this is all, like, the same place. Along those lines of thinking, one of my personal theories is that Bing Bong lives. And I think it would tie into the Pixar theory, because I firmly believe that the Bing Bong that we saw die in Inside Out, or be forgotten in Inside Out, was just, like, a mental avatar for Riley's monster from Monsters, Inc. I think that Bing Bong is a comedian who, you know, was probably collecting Riley's laughter. And he is probably somewhere at in Monsters at Work. Like, I am, fingers crossed, that he shows up in that Pixar show of, you know, the changeover from collecting children's screams to collecting their laughter, and that we see Bing Bong return and be glorious and amazing and not dead.
I do see something here. It says, you remember Merida opening doors and the, I'm saying that right, right?
Yeah, Merida.
Yeah, you remember Merida opening doors and the witch constantly disappearing? It's because those doors are made the same way from Monsters, Inc. They transport across time, and that's why Merida couldn't find the witch later in the movie. And then there was also, obviously, this little wood carving of Sully that you see for a brief second in the workshop. Now, I appreciate this. I definitely think they all live in the same world, but I think that's just because Pixar and Disney in general loves to do Easter eggs.
Yeah.
So I think that that's why you'll see, like, in Toy Story, you'll see in Coco, like, some things from Toy Story, and, you know, you'll see little Easter eggs throughout Disney.
Yeah, I like how some of them were like, oh, the cars talk and have sentience because the emotions have moved into them.
What?
Yeah. It's crazy. There's like there's a whole machine human uprising and like...
Have they built out a timeline?
Because yeah, it's a whole timeline. Like, no, there's a whole book now. Like, it's literally its own podcast, honestly. There probably is a podcast that just breaks down the theory. which is basically like just Pixar conspiracy theories. So it has its own in-universe conspiracy theory, I would say.
I mean, why not?
And, you know, the cool thing is, like, Pixar didn't just, you know, stick to Pixar. I mean, creative heads from Pixar were consulted to fine-tune the script in the 2011 live-action film The Muppets. They helped with story development on The Jungle Book, as well as providing suggestions for the film's, like, in-credits sequences.
Yeah, and I think that goes to show how there was a big storytelling shift from just retelling mythology that we've grown up with in those timeless tales, but to also just ask what we're experiencing now, like these questions of, does this story need to be told? What about this story will tell us and inform us about the life we're living and the life in the places that we want to go to? And them being able to go in and kind of like, you know, infuse all these other things around them with this tenet is kind of, I think, what's made, you know, the fabric of film and like animated films like richer, contributed to that. Because like now you have, I don't know, Danny, if you've experienced part of this, but like when you go into different like rooms and get notes from like fellow creatives, like that became a big thing with Pixar. So Pixar Story Trust would go to Disney, give critiques or ideas for those films, and then Disney people go to Pixar to screen their films and give story notes, and like now it's become that.
Yeah, so even though Ralph was at Walt Disney Animation, they still went to Pixar to show the executives there the movie and then get notes, kind of like a focus group. And then they would cut scenes, which I haven't seen and want to see. Maybe it's in the extra things or whatever, but Pixar would be like, nah, go ahead and cut this. And so that still does happen, even though they're technically separate. They are separate animation studios. So another thing that we left out was that both former and current Pixar folks, both former and current Pixar animators were recruited for traditional hand-drawn animated sequence for the 2018 film Mary Poppins Returns. I also know that isn't, oh no, that's not Pixar. I was about to say Howard, the guys that did, isn't there Brad Bird? No, it is Brad Bird is working on something right now, right? That's live action and animation. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's bounced around. He did, you know, the Mission Impossible film and did a Tomorrowland, which was Disney, which also kind of like brought him and like Damon Lindelof together, which ironically, I recently watched Watchmen, and there is a thing in Tomorrowland, like a memory sort of orb that the main character goes to that found new life in Watchmen. And I was like, ooh, Tomorrowland reference, because Lindelof. But yeah, he and Lindelof, like, write stuff together. They've done Tomorrowland, and I cannot remember what the thing he is working on right now is.
Oh, he hinted at it just a tiny bit, but I do think it's like a combination of both of those. Pixar representatives have also assisted in the English localization of Studio Ghibli films, mainly those from Hayao Miyazaki. And like Sabina was saying, they developed a live-action hidden camera reality show titled Pixar in Real Life for Disney Plus. So you can watch that out on Disney Plus right now.
So Pixar in Real Life is basically taking characters from Pixar movies and just throwing them in like real life environments for strangers to stumble upon. People have stumbled upon like the emotional dashboard. They've stumbled across Dash from The Incredibles, and that one actually really got me. Some of them were kind of like, okay, this is cute, but the Dash one, they had a kid at a block corner, like adults, and be like, hey, can you time me? I'm gonna run around this block in 5 seconds. And they would time him, and he would run one direction, and then he would just appear magically from the other direction and be like, oh, how many seconds was that? And he'd be like, oh, it was 9 seconds. But they'd also be like, how did this child just get around this entire block in 9 seconds? But it was identical twins, spoiler alert, that were pretending to be the character. Mm. And it's adorable.
Well, Like you said, there's an entire podcast on Pixar because there's so many films.
Yeah.
Their latest film, by the way, which we mentioned, is Onward. So that's the last Pixar film to come out. It dropped March 6, 2020, and then kind of didn't really get to be in theaters because of the pandemic. So they moved it to Disney Plus pretty quickly. I was shocked at how touched I was by this film. I really didn't think I would be, but they did it. They have a way of getting you with parental. They know that we all have parental issues in our lives.
Yeah.
And they just really know how to capitalize on that. Have you seen Onward?
Not yet, no.
Oh, you should watch it. If you have, if you're like busy tonight or tomorrow, you should watch it and then get back to us. I think you would like it.
Super, super down.
Oh, we didn't talk about the big thing. The moments that Pixar movies have made us cry.
every moment
yeah I know.
Well, yes, we will give a shout out to Randy Newman, who I think set the stage for Toy Story. I mean, I don't think Toy Story would be the same without Randy Newman. Just a lot of iconic songs, but also he did the music for Cars. We have to talk about Michael Giacchino, who did the iconic music for The Incredibles, also Ratatouille, both and directed by Brad Bird, and Up. So,
definitely, they all set the stage, like with Michael Giacchino's music for Up.
And Married Coco.
Life and Coco.
Yeah.
My heart.
yeah.
So we've talked about this on other episodes, but Brad Bird has been very adamant that these are animated films. They're not kids' films. And so I think he really doesn't like when people tweet at him about, like, you shouldn't say that you make kids' films. And he is like, I don't. I make animated films.
Yeah.
And so they're family films for sure, but it should be for every member of the family. And I do think that they do that great. Like I was saying, there were jokes that my parents got in Toy Story that I didn't understand until I was older. It still was very much like, you know, I had a Woody doll. My brother had a Buzz Lightyear. So it was still something that we latched onto, but also that adults could enjoy.
Yeah, that's what, you know, and I think that's, I think we've talked about this on one of our mini episodes, but that's kind of like the makings of a good film is a good, I guess, animated film is, it should, everyone should like it. I think it really focusing on that word family film, like family isn't just the kids, family is the parent and all that. And that's the difference. You know, we'll watch a film. And I would classify it as a quote unquote kids film because I'm like, yeah, I mean, I get why kids would enjoy this, but for me, nah. And then you'll watch a film and you're like, oh no, Naomi can watch this, but I can watch, even if Naomi wasn't here, I'd be watching this, which is a lot of, not a lot. I'd say every Pixar.
Yeah.
Even Cars. That's always the discussion whenever it's so funny. I meant to mention this earlier, but when the discussion of Pixar movies come up, they always say even Cars. I don't know what it is about Cars, but people do not really enjoy it.
Yeah. And it's about community too, though, because it's, you know, Lightning McQueen was all about like being the winner and like being number one or whatever, and he had to be humbled down to embrace the community around him that would uplift him to succeed again. And like how the people around you are like the most important. Okay, fine. Cars is my favorite Cars movie.
Love it. I think that we did it. I think we talked about, we can't get into all 22 movies, but we at least said their names. Most of them are actually sequels as I'm looking through this. A good portion of this makeup is this, like, you know, Cars 3, Toy Story 3, 4, Monsters, Inc., the second Monsters, Inc. Like, they have a lot of sequels in here. Finding Dory going along with Finding Nemo. So, The Incredibles 2. They definitely have that in the bank. Making things that they're able to make for a decade, you know?
Yeah.
The first Toy Story came out in 1995, and the last Toy Story, which I can guarantee will not be the last, even if they think that it is. But Toy Story 4 came out in 2019. So, yeah. Wow. That is a long run.
Yeah.
Dude, as we were talking about scenes that made you cry, with Toy Story 4, when I knew that they were retiring these characters, I was just like, also fascinating because it was the same year that this final Star Wars came out, and they were like, we're retiring these characters. You'll never see them again. And so when I was watching Toy Story 4, I was like, this is chill. I won't cry until the end. I know they're going to be gone in the end. Something's going to happen. They're going to send us off, but I won't cry until the end. The first 5 minutes of Toy Story 4, why and how dare you? I was just like, no, they got me the first. How could they did it again? Did it again. I don't want to give anything away, but it was between Woody and Bo Peep. It was a moment between Bo Peep and Woody. And I was like, why did you do this? There was rain.
That was so brutal. It's so weird because like some of these Pixar movies recently are kind of way too real because, you know, that was like, say goodbye to your old friends. And then, you know, obviously Coco was like, how to say goodbye to your loved ones and deal with death not being a final resting place. It could, you know, you will see them on the other side. And then they had to drop the trailer for Soul, which was like, how to deal with your possibly incoming death.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready for this movie. It was supposed to come out, I think, last week.
Was it?
As of time of recording.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Oh.
I forgot to say, check out my friend Roy Wood Jr. starring in Soul. He's just so Roy, for those that Jamie Foxx is playing the lead in Soul, but the character looks exactly like Roy Wood Jr.
It was so funny.
And so he's just been like running along with that joke. So check it out. I hope that he is at the premiere at least. I think he should be invited to the premiere.
Oh, yeah. Well, when they borrowed his face, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like you got to at least get an invite.
Well, a bunch of the animators follow him too. So I want to be like, get that
they knew what was
get
up.
That Pixar money, Roy. Sabina, where can everyone find you?
Everyone can find me on Twitter at Sabina has no R. I do many things. I'm a filmmaker and I am a story coordinator for the Something Scary podcast and channel on YouTube. And that's at We Are Snarled. I write the spooky things for everyone.
Love it.
And anything I do will be on that platform. And my Instagram is at That Lady Graves.
Ooh, That Lady Graves.
I am at Ms. Danny Fernandez on all the things. Yes, next week will be our last episode, but don't worry, we have a bunch of things planned and we'll be talking to some great people and having a lot of fun. So just remember, keep it fun. You know, we're not dying. We're not going to end up in Soul. this isn't Inside Out. This isn't the first 10 minutes of Up or Toy Story 4, literally any of those films, or Finding Nemo. Iffy, what about you?
Yeah. Iffy Wadiway, Twitter, Instagram, IffDs on Twitch. Come see me on Twitch. We'll be playing video games, you know?
Thank you again to Super Producer Joel for popping in and for working with us.
Yeah.
Zach McKeever, our engineer, Jacquees Neal, who's been doing the editing, and
Jacquees.
We will catch you next week for our final week. Until then, stay nerdy.
Stay nerdy.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-lunch pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit RightRug.com. That's RiteRug.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.